Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. On behalf of Pastors David and Nicole Binion, thank you for joining us today at the Dwell Church Podcast. For more information about Dwell Church, visit us at dwell.church. Now, let's listen to today's message.
So I'm speaking today on eyes for first love, because I believe that every issue of life comes down to this one thing of first love with Jesus. I believe that whether you are aware of it or not, the greatest need of your heart is to love the Lord and be loved by Him. The highest ministry you could ever go to is down at the feet of Jesus. It's the ministry of His feet. And so it was a few weeks ago, actually, when we started this series, the Lord gave me this dream, which He hasn't really given me dreams in like a few years. So in this dream, I was driving my car in the McKinney, Frisco area, and all of a sudden my vision just got completely blurry. I just couldn't see at all. And not only my vision got blurry, but my heart just started to get cold. Like I felt the awareness of His presence lift. I was aware that I was unaware. And immediately I'm thinking, I need to go to the eye doctor. Which I don't like going to the eye doctor. I worked at one, and my family knows that was not a fun experience. People would walk in with pink eye, and I'm like, where is the trash can? I did not like going to the eye doctor. And so I pull into this eye doctor. It magically appeared because it was my dream. And I go in, and I sit down. They finally call my name and say, okay, Mr. Delano, you can come see us. And they take me to the doctor. He's just sitting down, and he said, okay, come sit down. I want to go over your history. And all of a sudden, this eye clinic transformed into a restaurant, and he put a big plate of food in front of me. I don't know if it's because I was fasting and I was hungry, but he put a big plate of Korean beef bulgogi right in my face. He says, let's go over your history. I'm thinking, oh, my medical history. So I begin thinking back, okay, what's been wrong with me? But out of nowhere, I begin sharing with him my history with the Lord. I begin sharing with him my spiritual history with the Lord. I remember going all the way back and telling him my first encounter with God when I was 6 years old in children's church. And I just remember the worship team singing this song of, Lord, I magnify you, I magnify you. I didn't even know what that word meant, but I just felt this wind from heaven come fill my heart at 6 years old. I didn't have a language for it, but I knew that nothing on earth could give me what this thing gives me right now. And I remember sharing within that moment, then I remember sharing, oh, when I was 7 years old, there was this this almost enlightening thing that happened at our home church. There's this prophet that came for like an entire week and just brought revival to our church. And I remember just singing in tongues just at age 7. I remember one of the nights I told my mom, I said, I wanna go before service with the intercessors and pray. And I remember saying, I'm gonna get called out on the service. And they're like, okay, really, you're gonna get called out? How do you know that? And I remember taking this huge Dake's Bible to church with me at 7 years old, said, I'm bringing this with me. And sure enough, the glory hit, and I got a word over my life that marked me forever. Not only the word of the Lord, but it was the encounter. It was the first love encounter that did something to me that thousands other moments apart would not do for me. There's one moment I remember sharing with him. Oh, when I was 15 years old, I was so deeply insecure, but I remember locking the door and getting down on my face and saying, Lord, show yourself to me. The same God that met me at age 7, meet me again. And he began showing me visions of my future. And I remember sharing with him when I was 18, and he freed me completely of fear and anxiety. He showed me my identity in the Lord. And I just began sharing with him every moment, every marker that I had with the Lord. And all of a sudden, this restaurant now, it turned into this massive arena, and immediately my eyes unlocked, my vision got clear, my heart started burning again, and I felt like I was looking into 10 years in the future of the Church of Jesus Christ. And in this arena, there was just revival marking the earth. It was like a symbol of what was happening in the earth. There was just people just being healed of the craziest diseases. There was young and old. I remember seeing familiar faces of older worship leaders, younger worship leaders coming together. I remember just seeing just glory fill this arena. My heart was burning and my eyes open. And when I woke up, I heard the Lord say this specific phrase: to see where you're going, feast your eyes on where you've been. To see where you're going, feast your eyes on where you've been. In other words, he was saying, the key to spiritual vision is found in feasting your eyes on your history with God, your moments in him, and your first love. If you want to see your end, go back to your beginning. Go back to how the Lord met you. If he met you by delivering you from drugs, guess what your future looks like? You're called to deliver others from that. If he met you by healing your body, guess what your end looks like? It looks like healing others. This is what the Lord does. He loves to repeat testimony. Breakthrough is found in your beginning. The children of Israel would do this thing. Anytime the Lord did an incredible miracle or met them radically, they would always put up a stone marker as a symbol of what the Lord did so they could look back on their history with him and get confidence for the future. Because how many know life happens, we go through stuff, and they would look back and say, oh wait, there's difficulty right now, I'm hitting a wall, but 10 years ago, the Lord met me right here. This is a marker, this was my first love, and therefore, he will do it again. It gives confidence for what he will do in the future. I know personally, in my quiet time with God, before I do anything, I go back and remember my history with him. I remember. I pull my prophetic words out and I just listen to him, say, Lord, where did you speak to me? What was my first encounters? Because I need vision for where I'm going in the future. I want to pray from the place of my past. I want to pray from the place where you met me so I can pray rightly. So if anything this morning, I just want to just invoke everybody to have a fresh hunger for the Lord, to remember the first moments with him, to let your eyes burn with fire. Because I believe everybody in this room, if you're sitting here, you've been met by the Lord at some point. At some point, the Lord marked you, he met you, and what happens at times is days, weeks, months, years, decades go by, and we have this tendency to forget, and we end up growing past our first love. Idols begin to rise in our hearts, and it could even be good things. My spouse, Emily, could be an idol if I made her one. Like breakthrough, God's breakthrough can be an idol if we allow our eyes to shift to that thing. And I just feel like the Lord is saying, come back. Come back. Set your eyes back if you want to see ahead. Set your eyes back if you want to see forward. I want to read really quick in Revelation chapter 1. I want to start here in verse 10. It says, on the Lord's day, I was in the spirit, and I heard behind me a loud voice like a trumpet, which said, write on a scroll what you see and send this to the seven churches. It says, I turned around to see the voice that was speaking to me, and then I turned and I saw seven golden lampstands. And among the lampstands was someone like a son of man dressed in a robe reaching down to his feet with a golden sash around his chest. I love this description of Jesus. It says, the hair on his head was white like wool, as white as snow. His eyes were like blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in a furnace, and his voice was like the sound of rushing waters. Drop down to Verse 17, it says, when I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. Is that not the proper response when we see the King of Kings, the Ancient of Days, the one whose eyes blaze like fire, the one whose head is white as wool, when we see him rightly to fall at our face as though we're dead? Because everything we have is found in this one thing. It's locking eyes with the King of Glory, with the King of Kings, who's coming back for a bride, who's on fire, who's burning for him. I'm just going to go for it today, guys, if that's okay. In chapter 2, Jesus says to the church, I know your deeds. I know your hard work, your perseverance. I know that you cannot tolerate wicked people, that you have tested those who claim to be apostles but are not and have found them false. You have persevered and have endured hardships for my name and have not grown weary. Yet I hold this against you. You've forsaken the love you had at first. Consider, or another translation says, remember. Remember, remember, remember how far you have fallen. Repent and do the things you did at first. See, Jesus is speaking to this church that once burned, that once had the encounter, that once had it. However, years and years and years after that, intimacy had turned into an industry. Intimacy had turned into an industry. He's saying, hey, you're doing everything right. You're not in sin. You're doing everything right. You're feeding the poor. You're serving so well. However, I hold one thing against you, and it's the most important thing. You've left the love at first. See, we have this tendency as individuals and as the global church of Jesus Christ to complicate love with for God. We have a tendency to like move past this main thing, this simple thing right here, and create things that, and we slap the label of love on it, but really it is not love. There's a way, there's a proper way to love the Lord rightly and to lock eyes with him without locking eyes with everything around him. It's possible for you to be sitting in this church, Dwell Church. We have amazing worship, have amazing things happening, and you could be locking eyes with every other idol except the King of Kings, the Ancient of Days, the one whose eyes burn. And it's sobering. It's like we're human. It happens. This has just been my life of like, oh, Lord, my eyes are shifting again. Lord, give me dove eyes. How many of you know doves do not have peripheral vision? They cannot see what's to the left or to the right of them. They can only see what's ahead. In the book of Song of Solomons, the lover is writing and says, oh, how I have dove eyes for you. Only you, no other lover will give me what you give me, Jesus. How many of you know nothing will give you what the power and presence of the Lord can give you? So the key, the remedy for this, it's what's written here, is to remember. Remember, I'm convinced every issue of life is found in this one thing. If you're here right now, your heart is cold, maybe you've gotten numb to the things of God. This is not condemnation, this is an invitation, because everyone's been there. Maybe you used to weep over the word, you couldn't put it down, and now you just don't even have a desire for it anymore. It's like your heart just gets cold, right? It's just life happens. It's just, you know, work happens. Life happens. And I just hear the Lord saying, there's an invitation. Set your eyes back at first love. Breakthrough is found in your beginning. Set your heart back at first love. So I just want to speak the next few minutes on three principles to have eyes for first love. Three principles to have eyes for first love. Number one is set your eyes to the simplicity of ministry to Jesus, ministering to Jesus. They interviewed Billy Graham in 2011, and they asked him this one thing. They said, hey, if you could go back and do it over again, what would you do differently? Billy Graham led millions of people to the Lord. He lived an extraordinary life. He never had a moral failure. This was just an incredible man, and he responded with this. He said, I would study more, I would pray more, travel less, take less speaking engagements. I took too many of them in too many places around the world. If I had to do it over again, I'd spend more time in meditation and prayer just telling the Lord how much I love him. Oh, Lord, burn in our hearts again. God, give us dove eyes for you again. See, I believe what Billy Graham is saying, he's saying, hey, the evangelism's not a bad thing. We pray for it. The souls are not a bad thing. We cry out for it. But he's saying, I do all these things best when I love Jesus first. When I do this first, everything else I do best. And that's how we don't create idols in our heart. When we love Jesus first, we do everything else best. I love my wife best when I love Jesus first. She can tell. When she comes home, she's like, you weren't with the Lord today, were you? Say, no. Say, go back into the room, spend an hour in there, come back and talk to me. Isn't that crazy? You can spend a day without the presence of God, and automatically you're in a depression funk. You forget every prophetic word that happened. You spend 1 hour in his presence. It's like, oh, my God, you're amazing. But that's it. A young man just asked me a couple days ago. He said, hey, I feel called to preach. I feel called to be a pastor. What is my first step? I said, oh, that's so easy. Fall in love with Jesus. I said, go into your room, close the door, minister to him until he shows up, and don't leave until he's done. See, I believe the Lord is raising up a generation who is not obsessed with image, who's not obsessed with following, who's not obsessed with technology, but who has this singular obsession with the eyes and face of Jesus, who burns with the fire of first love. That's who he's raising up right now. He's marking this generation. He's marking them. They cannot be bought. They cannot be coerced. They are after this one thing. It's what's happening. It's what's happening. Matthew 22:37. One of the Pharisees, an expert in the law, tested Jesus with this question. He said, teacher, which is the greatest command in the law? Jesus replied, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest. And the second is this, love your neighbor as yourself. See, the kingdom of God is a kingdom of priorities. And the Pharisees in this moment were asking Jesus, hey, we have all these duties as believers. We have all these things. There's giving, there's tithing, there's serving, there's evangelism, all these commandments. What is the greatest? And Jesus said, oh, that's so easy. It's love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength. See, to us with a natural mind in the Western church, we think in terms of business, we think in terms of productivity. And so hearing this as the first commandment, it sounds like this is so unproductive. To just sit and love the Lord, like, how are things gonna get done? Things gotta happen, right? But Jesus says, when you love me first, more happens in one moment than 1,000 moments on your own. This is what happens when we love the Lord first. And many times in the global church, we have taken this scripture and we say, okay, love the Lord your God. That's the greatest commandment, right? And so we've taken that and we've interpreted that of, let's do a lot of things for Jesus and we'll call it love. But how many of you know doing things for the Lord does not actually mean you are loving him rightly? I know a lot of things I can do for Emily that brings life to her. She loves Dunkin' Donuts coffee. We did that yesterday. Gave her a Dunkin' Donuts coffee. She loves it. But that is not loving her. That's serving her in love. It's not loving her. She loves to go shopping. We did that yesterday too. She loves it. I could take her to Paris and it would be an act of love, but that would not be loving her. A few weeks ago, we were in the Frisco Stonebriar Mall. And we were there on a Saturday. It was just crowded and crazy. I just wanted to get out. I wanted to get in there, get my pretzel, and then leave. And so we went to Annie Ann's or Annie Annie's. I never know how to say it. And we got our pretzels. We sat down, and we're eating. And I'm like, let's go. I'm ready to leave. And she says, oh, can we take a few minutes and talk? And I'm like, it's chaotic in here. How are we going to have a conversation? It's like teenagers everywhere. And I made a decision to, in the midst of distraction, in the midst of my own schedule, in the midst of my own priorities, to make her the number one priority in this moment. And we locked eyes, and we talked, and we just started dreaming. We just started dreaming. Birthing dreams. Have you know, dreams are birthed from the place of locking eyes with Jesus. Many of us, we have our own schedules, we have our own things going on, and we're trying to be creative, we're trying to get life and dreams from all these things. I want to tell you, the best dreams come from locking eyes with Jesus, being with him. How many of you know nobody gets pregnant by holding hands? There's something called intimacy. There's something called being alone with your love and being with them, and something, therefore, is produced from intimacy. Dreams are always produced from intimacy with Jesus. So much intimacy happens when two people lock eyes with Jesus. You know, 90% of the time during my season, the season I'm in right now, I have not felt like being with the Lord. I've not felt like it. There's seasons where I do. There's seasons where I'm like, yes, I want to be with Jesus every day. But 90% of the time in this season, I have not felt like it. But how many of you know our soul should never lead our spirit? That's when I rise up and I say, soul, like David did, I command you, we are going to be with the Lord today. We are going to shut everything off, whatever needs to be shut off. I don't care if things fall through. I need to be with Jesus, because just his voice gives me life. I don't even care what you say. I just want to hear your voice. It's like bread to my soul. Your spirit's like water to my spirit. I make it a point. Soul, we will be with the Lord. We will remind ourselves of where we've been, and it will fill us with confidence for where we are going. Be with Jesus at all cost. Be with Jesus at all cost. I've been telling the Lord lately, I've realized, Lord, I don't just need you to preach a sermon. I need you to survive. If I go one day without being with the Lord, it's like, oh my God, you don't want to talk to me. He said, man shall not live on bread alone, but every word that comes from the mouth of God. You are alive because he speaks. You are alive. One word from the Lord will do more than thousands of words from everybody else. This is what he does. Number two, to love Jesus well, we must see him rightly. A few months ago, I was serving in Joel Kids, and there's a lot of young boys in Joel Kids. And the young boys in Joel Kids, they have the ability to take the simplest, quietest, easiest game that we're playing and turn it into like World War II. And so there was a game that we were playing. It's called Cornhole. We have these bean bags, and we toss them into this, like, cardboard thing. And all of a sudden, these bean bags just start flying across the room, whizzing across my face. And all of a sudden, before I could say anything, I got smacked in the face in my glasses with a bean bag. And the kids are like, oh, Mr. Tanner, are you okay? I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm just like, put them up. Put them up. But I realized, I took my glasses off, and I'm like, oh, dang it. My glasses are completely smeared. They're not broken or anything, but they were just completely just smeared. And I'm like, I have to go the whole day seeing the world through a smeared lens. And I thought, I could go get a paper towel and wipe them off, but that would just scratch them and make it worse. I thought, I could use my shirt. That would probably scratch it too and make it worse. I could maybe run some hot water through it, but I don't know. I don't have anything to dry it with. And I know from experience, the one thing that can cleanse my lens is something called Dawn dish soap in hot water. And I use that to clean it. But how many of you know we have a lens over the eyes of our hearts? And life happens. Hurt happens. Church hurt happens. Pain happens. Loss happens. It's real. Life happens, and therefore the lens of our heart gets shattered, and we therefore see a perfect Father through an imperfect lens. How many of you know you become whatever you behold? Whatever you worship, you reproduce that. You become like that thing which you worship. And if you see the Lord through a distorted lens, then you are therefore not seeing him rightly and are not being transformed into his perfect image. because of something that we call pain, something that we call lies, something that we call that. In Dwell Youth a few weeks ago, we just had an incredible move of the Holy Spirit. It's like he just fell like a blanket over everybody, and I didn't really know what to do in that moment. It's like, what do you even say right now? But I just felt like the Lord was prompting me to ask them, what lies have you believed in your heart? What has shattered the lens of your heart? And little by little, every single teen was sharing just pain that they've gone through, lies that they've been believing. And after they shared and exposed the smear on their glasses, the smear on the lens of their heart, we would shower them with prophetic words. We would shower them with truth. In Ephesians 5:25, it says, as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, he cleanses her by the washing with water through the word. What was happening? They were taking off their glasses. Here, this is my pain. And what we were doing, let's get the washing of your word. We're going to wipe that off for you. We're going to declare the truth of who God says you are. See, everybody in this room, we have had pain. We have had disappointment. Many of us are carrying it in our heart. I want to tell you, maybe sometimes we go to TV to try to fix and clean that smear on our glasses, but it just makes it worse. Maybe we go to medication to try to clean that and that smear, but it just makes it worse. We try to do all these things, self-soothing things, but still when you lay your head down at night, you feel a gaping emptiness in your heart because those things were never meant to feel that thing. There's only one thing, it is the power of God. It's the presence of God that can touch that can clean that part of your heart. If his word creates universes, if it creates galaxies, how much more does it do to our heart when we hear him speak? His word is that vital. It cleans the lens of our hearts. It soothes it. I want to read in Genesis chapter 28, and I'm going to start in verse 10. We're really familiar with this story. It says, Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. Taking one of the stones there, he put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. There above it stood the Lord, and he said, I am the Lord your God, the father of Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and to the east, to the north and the south. All peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised. Lastly, it says, when Jacob awoke from his sleep, he said, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. He was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. See, many people don't know this, but this was Jacob's first love encounter with the Lord. See, Jacob, his name actually in Hebrew means deceiver. If your name's Jacob in English, it doesn't mean deceiver, so you're good. But Jacob in Hebrew, it means deceiver. And he literally had this upbringing where God was just simply an idea that he had heard about from his father. It was just an idea. And he's on this journey. He has to leave because his brother pretty much wants to kill him. And he is in a dark, dark place. And what happens is he lays down and he has this marking encounter with the Lord. And he wakes up and says, I have to name this place something because something happened here in this place that has given me something in my heart that no other place I've been to has given me. Yeah. I was marked here and something marked me. Something, I tasted something that I've never tasted before in my life. And in the moment like that, he was transformed in his first encounter with the Lord. Yeah. Maybe to you, God is just simply an idea. Maybe I'm talking about first love and you've never even had that happen. I want to tell you that he is available at all times to mark you, to encounter you. The word says that if you ask for bread, he will not give you a stone. Simply ask. He marked Jacob. Jacob named this place Bethel because he knew no earthly place was like this. In other words, no earthly thing could satisfy him ever again like this moment satisfied, transformed, and moved him. Nothing could wash him like this one thing can wash him. Once you have tasted the glory of God, nothing on earth can satisfy or wash you, wash the lens of your heart like this one thing can. Like this one thing can. It's his presence. It's his power. It's his glory. We create systems and structure that tries to heal this, but only a moment with him can do it. I want to end here, and we can get keys up. I'm sorry, Pastor David. I feel so awkward every time I ask you, play keys for me. Number three, remember your place of encounter. Remember your place of encounter. Next, I want to read Genesis 34. Chapter 35. Genesis chapter 35. Here we see Jacob again. And this takes place years after that first love encounter. It takes place years after that moment. And Jacob has just been through a lot. In the chapter prior to this, probably one of the most tragic stories in all of the Bible takes place. What happens is Jacob's daughter ends up getting raped by a group of men from a far-off city. And Jacob's sons want to take revenge. They go off and they kill every man in that city. And Jacob is left in a devastating place, a dark place, a place of no hope, a place of no future. I'm sure we can all identify with this, of being in a place where you feel you can't see a future, that you lose vision, you are spiritually blind. It's like he can barely remember that moment that happened years ago, and he's in this place of like, my world's falling apart. And the Lord responds to Jacob here in chapter 35. It says, then God said to Jacob, my translation says, get up. Get up. Go to Bethel and settle there and build an altar there to God who appeared to you when you were fleeing from your brother Esau. What is the Lord saying? He says, remember that place that I met you. You're in a dark place right now. You can't see. Go back to the encounter. Go back to the place and you will see what's ahead. Get up. Get up. So Jacob said to his household and to all who were with him, get rid of the idols. Get rid of the foreign gods. Get rid of all the things we made up to appease us, to satisfy our souls. Get rid of everything. We're going back to our first love. We're going back to the encounter. Get rid of it. Come, let us go, where I will build an altar to God. When you're in a dark place, when you can't see, when you can't hear, and when you can't feel, you can always go back to where you remember. You can always remember when you don't have spiritual eyes, when you lost your ears to hear, oh, when your heart can't feel anymore, you're numb. You can always remember. You can always remember. A few years ago, many of you know this, Emily and I felt the pull of the Lord to go to Bible school. Before we left, just the lens of my heart was shattered. Just life happened. Life just happened. And I felt like I was hitting a wall with God. Every time I got before him, I felt nothingness. I went before him almost every night. Lord, where are you? Nothing. Nothing. I couldn't see. I lost my spiritual sight. And all we heard was this whisper, lay down everything and go be with me. And so we did. We dropped our salaries, said goodbye to family, and we went out. We went out to California. And instead of the darkness getting better, it got worse. I was in the epicenter of revival in America. I was at Bethel Church in Redding, California. I had almost every leader pray over me. Nothing happened. There was one night or a complete month where I literally could not sleep 1 minute because I was so plagued by torment and depression and just darkness. I just couldn't sleep at night for like a month. And the Lord said so gently, what you're looking for is not going to be found in a man. It's not going to be found in a geographic region. It's going to be found when you go and close the door and be with me. And he met me. met me so radically. There was power in moving. There was power in going to where his voice was calling us because he decided to meet us there. And he met us so deeply where just food had lost its taste and entertainment stopped entertaining us. We just had to turn the TV off because it's like this thing will not give us what we just tasted. Like nothing will give us what this thing gives us, Lord. We love you. We love you. And then several months passed. We graduated. We have beautiful months, just beautiful months with Jesus. His presence was an open door. He literally enlightened the eyes of our heart with the spirit of wisdom and revelation. And we moved here, had beautiful months here. It was beautiful. And then about this time last year, I went through another dark place of anxiety and depression. And it's not like I was in sin. Nothing really happened. It's just I let my eyes sway. I let my eyes go off the one thing. And I found myself in not so great of a place. And the Lord told me very gently, he said, Tanner, I will comfort you, but I will not coddle you. You've seen too much to doubt me. Like, I want to tell you, we're held accountable to what we've seen, to what we've tasted.
Wow, he said,
get up, remember, and then get yourself out of this. How many of you know the Lord sometimes does not do things for you because he wants to do things through you? Remember the place. He said, if you want to be coddled, call your grandmas. They'll coddle you, like, right? They will say, oh, it's okay. He said, you don't need that right now. It's in you. Get up. Go back to the encounter. Go back to the place. And I did it. I got up and I said, no, Lord, you said this over me right here. I remember what you did right here. You spoke over my life. I do have a future. You spoke over me. I remember it. I don't feel it. I can't see it, but I can remember it. And it birthed vision. It birthed power in me to go ahead. Get up. Get up. We're held accountable for what we've seen in the Lord. What a tragedy it would be to still doubt the Lord when we've seen him split the Red Sea for us. We saw him split the Red Sea, and yet we still come to a wall and we doubt again. We've lost our right to doubt him. He's been too good. He's been too faithful. He's been too beautiful. He's been too worthy. It's who he is. Oh. And this season Emily and I are in has been just such a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful season. We've had so much breakthrough and victory in just so many areas of our lives. But I found myself this week when I went to be with the Lord, I said, Lord, everything's awesome. We have breakthrough, but there's one thing missing. My heart doesn't burn again. I don't cry anymore when I say your name. I don't weep anymore in your presence. I said, I would trade the breakthrough for this one moment with you, just one word with you. It does more for me than anything else in this world. Lord, burn in my heart again. Touch my eyes again. I want to see you. Nothing will give me what you give me, Lord. I was honest with him. I said, my heart's numb. I want to go to another place where food doesn't have a taste anymore. I just want to taste you. And he so gently honored my honesty, honored my vulnerability, and said, here you go, buddy. Here's fire in your heart again. He is a good father. He will give you what you ask. If your heart is numb, ask him, touch my heart again. If your heart doesn't burn anymore, ask him, Lord, touch my eyes again. I know you're a good father. If it doesn't happen today, keep asking. If it doesn't happen tomorrow, keep asking. He is a faithful father. He will give you bread when you ask for it. He'll give you water when you ask for it. Oh, can we just take a moment and stand? I just want us to close our eyes. I want to urge you, Joel, examine your hearts. Does your heart burn like it used to? This isn't condemnation, it's an invitation for more. Did your heart burn? Did you forget how your heart burned? Did your heart grow cold? Remember the moment he met you as a teenager. Remember the moment he delivered you from your addiction. Remember the moment where you couldn't put his word down. It just burned in your heart. You were weeping. Every moment you entered his presence, examine your heart. Examine the eyes of your heart. What happened? Did you grow numb? Did you allow idols to take the place where he needs to be? This is not condemnation. He's saying, come up higher, get up. There's a better place. Remember the place where I met you. Set your eyes on first love again. Slow down to his speed and you will go faster than you ever dreamed you could go. Slow down to the speed of his presence and you will go farther and faster than you ever dreamed you would go. Fall back into first love and he'll push you forward into destiny. Fall back again. Fall back again. When you can't see, when you can't feel, remember.
Thank you for joining us today at the Dwell Church Podcast. For more information about Dwell Church, visit us at dwell.church.